Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1265, we present three stories by new Life Rattle writer Samantha Ashenhurst. Samantha Ashenhurst, the youngest daughter of a nurse from the country and a teacher from the city, was born in Mississauga in 1986. She studied journalism in college and, after graduation, spent a few years working and traveling while figuring out her career path. After considering many options, from baking to funeral directing, Samantha decided to return to school. She currently attends university, focusing on literature, writing, and women's studies. Samantha Ashenhurst loves working on crossword puzzles, spending time with dogs of all sizes, and driving around while listening to Queens of the Stone Age. All three stories featured on tonight's program center on emotionally charged situations, yet Samantha's calm, deft hand allows the reader to respond on our own terms at our own pace. The personalities and actions of the characters we meet stand out in brilliant contrast to Samantha's cool presentation. In tonight's first story, the explosive outburst of a friend's father overshadows what should be a pleasant trip to visit grandparents at their country farm. Let's listen now as Samantha Ashenhurst reads her story, Green Beans and Barbie Dolls, tonight on Life Rattle.
Green Beans and Barbie Dolls by Samantha Ashenhurst. Stephanie, grab me a Coke and then we're going, barked Steph's dad as he lit up another cigarette. He smoked with his head rested against the palm of his hand. He sat on the concrete steps in front of their semi-detached house on Willoway. It was a humid July morning in 1997. That year, my summer vacation was spent almost exclusively with my best friend, Steph. We were both 11 and starting grade 6 the following September. Steph's grandfather owned a large farm about an hour away from our Mississauga homes. He specialized in exotic animals, so his farm always had its share of emus and llamas and pigs and cows. Her grandfather, though old, was strong. He had a thick German accent and kind, warm eyes. He was Steph's favorite person in the world, and the only one allowed to call her Steffi. Steph's father worked nights and was always tired during the day. Sometimes he nodded off at the dinner table while talking to Steph's mom. Steph didn't talk about her dad much, but when she did, she would tell me he was a bastard. I never knew how to respond. Steph ran inside to fetch her dad's Coke. I stood awkwardly on her driveway and watched her mom buckle her 5-year-old sister, Tara, into the back seat. Then she went back inside the house to grab their cocker spaniel, Dolly. Steph's dad continued to smoke a cigarette. The sun warmed the back of my neck, and the air smelled of sweat and coconut sunblock. The Honda Acclaim didn't have a working air conditioner. The drive to Norval would be unpleasant with a full car. Steph came back outside and handed her dad the can. He took it without thanking her. She turned and ran back toward the house to grab her woven knapsack. That summer, we had secretly started playing with Barbies again, something we hadn't done since kindergarten. We needed to bring the dolls so we could play with them in the tall grass next to her grandparents' house. Steph's dad stubbed out his cigarette and called after her. Stephanie, where are you going? Grandma's making us lunch. We gotta go. Now. Just a sec, she yelled and hurried into the house. Steph's mom came out with Dolly and placed her on the back seat with Tara. I stood next to the driver's side of the car. Her dad shuffled over to the car and stood next to Steph's mom. He took his keys from his pocket and played with them. I stood near the trunk and waited for Steph to cram into the already full back seat. Steph came out and hustled toward the car. Her purple plastic sandals snapped on the pavement as she walked. She carried her small knapsack in her left hand. Okay, get in the car, Steph's dad said. We gotta get moving if we're gonna be on time. Fuck, I'm hurrying, okay? Steph muttered in a low voice as she approached the rear driver's side door. Steph's dad moved quickly. In an instant, he had pinned her against the car door, the collar of her shirt bunched in his left hand. His face was red and his body rigid, his right fist pulled back, ready to strike. Steph's mom grabbed his arm and pulled him back. Doug, stop it, goddammit. Get away from her. Just let me hit her once, he spat. His angry voice rang through the quiet summer streets of suburbia. I didn't move. I stared at my best friend, still pinned to the hot car. Her face, initially marked with surprise, had transformed, displaying a look of complete disgust. She didn't say anything. She just watched his face. Steph's mother cursed her husband. Her dad lowered his fist. He released his grip on her Club Monaco t-shirt. Tara sobbed loudly inside the car. Dolly barked at us through the open window. We stood quietly for a beat. Steph's dad stepped back and looked at the ground, away from his daughter's eyes. Steph now stared at him. I still hadn't been able to move. All right, girls, get in the car, Steph's mom sighed. Grandma and Grandpa are waiting for us. We rode in silence for over an hour. Steph stared out the open car window, her face blank. Sweat collected on her brow, but she didn't wipe it away. Dolly sat wedged between Tara and me. I rubbed the dog's curly brown hair as Steph's father drove. We arrived at Steph's grandparents' house shortly after lunchtime. Her grandfather greeted us on the porch with kisses on our cheeks and told us that lunch was almost ready. He handed us a basket and asked that we pick some fresh green beans from his garden to have with lunch. We walked behind the house toward the garden, kicking pebbles as we walked. The summer heat magnified the smell of manure. As we silently picked beans together, I was almost certain I heard Steph utter something under her breath. Fucking bastard.
That was Green Beans and Barbie Dolls, written and read by Samantha Ashenhurst. Our second story opens early in the morning with a young woman who suffers the after effects of too much partying the night before. Her hangover begins a downward spiral when she notices the new text message light flashing on her boyfriend's cell phone. Let's listen now as Samantha Ashenhurst reads her story, The Birthday Party.
The Birthday Party by Samantha Ashenhurst. I wake up fully clothed, my head throbbing. The taste of Smirnoff ice and pepperoni pizza coats my dry mouth. The sun shines in my eyes through the slats of the white Venetian blinds. I drag my sore body to the edge of my bed and stand up on my shaky legs. The clock reads 9 a.m. It's official. My teenagers have come to an end. I open my bedroom door a crack and listen to the house. Silence. The pressure on my bladder forces me to the washroom across the hall. Then I puke twice, reliving last night's party with every wretch. I scrub my grainy teeth, refusing to stop until they feel smooth and new. The mirror reflects my tired, makeup-stained face. I rinse my skin with cold water and then choke down 3 Tylenol tablets. I leave the washroom and observe the quiet house. I look at my sister Shauna's closed bedroom door. She's still asleep. The carpeted stairs groan softly as I descend to the main landing. A scribbled note in my mom's scratchy writing waits for me in the kitchen. Happy birthday. Went to Aunt Bev's. See you this afternoon. XO, Mom and Dad. Bottles and plastic cups litter the kitchen counter. I ignore them and pour a large glass of orange juice. I swallow the drink in 5 large gulps. My throat is raw from smoking too much weed last night, and the juice soothes and burns. I leave the empty glass in the already full sink and sneak quietly down to the basement. Dark wood paneling covers the walls. The decrepit green carpet makes the room smell musty and stale. I find Mark asleep on our ratty gray love seat. His cropped, greasy black hair sticks up in all directions. His mouth lets out a gentle snore. I muffle a giggle as I observe Mark's skinny body sprawled on the love seat. One of his bony arms lies across his chest. The other swings a few inches above the carpet. He wears a melt banana t-shirt and a pair of black shorts. The blanket tangles between his long, bare legs. His socked feet dangle off the edge of the love seat. I approach him quietly, intending to wake him with a kiss, and then pause. Mark's white Nokia cell phone rests on the shag carpet next to the couch. A small light in the upper right-hand corner of the device flashes blue, indicating an unread text message. I step away from his dozing body and wonder who sent him a message this early on a Sunday. My body trembles as I realize I already know the answer. My feet feel hot in my new moccasin slippers, a birthday gift from Mark. I stand in the dark basement rec room, quietly biting the polish off my fingernails. Mark still snores. My eyes dart from his face to his cell phone. I decide I need to know the truth. I snatch up his phone and sit cross-legged on the floor next to the couch. Mark's eyes remain closed. He doesn't stir. I quickly unlock his phone. One unread message. I exhale heavily and inhale sharply. His phone shakes in my trembling hands. I study his face and determine that he's definitely asleep. Opening his inbox, I check the message's sender. Vicky. Of course. Vicky, Mark's new coworker, who is such a cool girl. Vicky, the one who Mark's gone out to drinks with most nights for the past month. Vicky, the one who just broke up with her long-term boyfriend. Vicky, the one who Mark hasn't let me meet. The blue light blinks incessantly. My finger hovers over the open button. I hesitate, debating if I want to ruin my birthday. I look at Mark's sleeping form on the sofa next to me and reflect on the past 3 years. I remember vaguely when we used to talk about our future together. After a trip to Montreal last summer, we spoke of starting a life together in a foreign city or traveling around Europe after my graduation. I'm not sure when or why these conversations stopped. Lately, unanswered phone calls and ignored text messages worried me, but Mark always had a seemingly legitimate excuse. I try to recall if he offered an explanation for being 3 hours late to the party last night, but I don't think I even bothered to ask. I wasn't interested in starting a fight in front of my friends. I watch him sleeping and bite my short nails until my cuticles bleed. I open Vicky's message. Can I have you tonight? My face flushes and my eyes water. I clutch Mark's phone in my hand and grit my teeth. I can feel my heart beating faster. I struggle to steady my breathing. Sitting on the carpet, I reread Vicky's words. I consider replying to her to ask if she knows about me at all, but I decide against it. I study the message until the words blur and lose all meaning. I stand above my sleeping boyfriend and toss his phone, message open, at his chest. It lands on his ribcage and jolts him awake. I think you've got to go. Mark looks confused. He picks up his phone and studies the screen. His eyes widen as he stares at the text message. She's just kidding around, he sputters. He tries to stand up, but the blanket, still wrapped around his legs, causes him to stumble. This isn't anything. I think you've got to go, I say again. My palms sweat, and my body shakes. My face feels hot. I stand at an arm's length from him, hugging myself. We can talk later. I really don't care. But right now, you have to go. Mark nods, his face blank. He throws a pair of black jeans over his shorts and grabs his black backpack. I walk him upstairs and onto the front porch, not bothering to remove my moccasins. A mourning dove coos in the distance as we stand and face each other. The sky is clear and blue. Across the street, Mr. Carson mows his lawn. My nose tickles and my eyes water at the smell of the fresh-cut grass. Mark hugs me, his thin arms wrapped loosely around my shoulders. I let him, but leave my hands to dangle defiantly by my side. "Call me later," he says into my hair. "I mean, call me when you want to talk. This isn't what it looks like. I mean it." He pulls away and looks into my eyes. "Happy birthday." Mark shuffles across the street to the bus stop, fumbling in his pocket for the fare. I walk back into the house and lock the door behind me. I yank off my moccasins and whip them into the front hall closet. I place my fingers on my throbbing temples and head up to the kitchen. I grab an oversized garbage bag from under the sink and start cleaning.
That was The Birthday Party, written and read by Samantha Ashenhurst. We close tonight's program with a three-part story that opens at a funeral service for a friend, Pete. Through vignettes, our narrator introduces us to his family, friends, and to Pete himself. After these brief glimpses of Pete's upbeat personality, talent, and shining future, we're left at a loss. Let's listen now as Samantha Ashenhurst reads Where Pete Went.
Where Pete Went by Samantha Ashenhurst. Pete's acoustic guitar rests on the table in the front of the room, alongside photographs, drawings, and a set of bongo drums. I stand against a wall next to the table and watch as Cassie picks up a photo, looks at it, and smiles. She wears a flowery purple dress and pink barrettes in her thin blonde hair. Cassie approaches her mother and tugs lightly on her black pants. Pete's sister, her face red and blotchy, crouches next to her daughter. "I like this one best," Cassie says softly as she shows her mother the photograph. Laura looks at the picture. She smiles at her daughter, her eyes filling with fresh tears. "You keep that one, Cassie," she says quietly, stroking her hair. "Uncle Petey would want you to keep that one." I turn away when Cassie embraces her mother. I walk to the back of the room and slip out the exit door unnoticed. I turn the corner of the building and face the cemetery. I look at the rows of white graves and elaborate tombstones. I rest my head against the wall and feel the grooves of the red brick scratch my skull. I concentrate on inhaling and exhaling. Warm tears pour from my eyes, soaking my face. I fumble in my purse for a cigarette. I light it with a shaky hand and breathe in the dense smoke. The air smells of springtime, thick with the scent of thawing leaves. I take a pull of my smoke and recall my afternoon with Pete 6 years ago. Pete and I danced around my kitchen, throwing a pile of condiments on some toast. We were creating a disgusting snack for our friend Dan. I pulled ketchup from the fridge, frosted flakes from the cupboard, and frozen peas from the freezer. Pete found nutmeg in the spice rack and sprinkled it on top as the finishing touch. "I dare you to taste it," he teased, floating the toast beneath my nose. "It'll be so very delicious." "No, I won't do it," I shrieked, turning my head from him and laughing. Pete placed the plate on the counter and turned me to face him, and pressed his forehead to mine. "Taste it," he playfully urged. I can feel his warm breath on my face. His lips smell like Sour Patch Kids. His familiar brown eyes, inches away, look into mine. "No way," I giggled. I placed my palms at my side. I shoved my shaking hands into the pocket of my blue jeans. My bare feet felt cold on the linoleum floor. Pete leaned in and gently kissed me. His lips felt soft and new. His hair smelled clean, like Pert Plus. Our faces separated and we looked at each other. Pete cleared his throat. "Sorry," he said with a small smile. He grabbed the plate from the counter and headed down to the TV room where our friend waited. I heard Pete laugh loudly as he presented Dan with his snack. Weeks after our only kiss, I looked at Pete across the table from me at the extreme pita close to Mayfield Secondary School. We sat at a table for four and piled our stuffed knapsacks onto the vacant chairs. Pete's black guitar case sat propped against the opposite side of the table. I'm sorry I haven't said anything about it. I swallowed a bite of my chicken pita. It happened so fast, and I didn't know what you were thinking about it, or even what I was thinking about it. No, it's okay, Pete assured me, mayonnaise on his chin. I didn't say anything either. I don't know what happened. I just wanted to kiss you, so I did. I wanted to kiss you too. I finished my pita and wiped my mouth. I untwisted the top of my apple juice bottle and took a swig. And I liked kissing you. But I don't know. It doesn't feel like we'd work as a couple. Yeah, Pete nodded and rested his roast beef pita on his tray. He sipped his root beer and sat back in his chair. His face widened into a big smile. We just get along so well, and I feel like I can talk to you about anything. I don't want to wreck this with a stupid high school relationship. We like each other too much to get together, I concluded with a smile. I crumpled my pita wrapper and downed the rest of my apple juice. I meant to tell you, Pete announced as he finished his pita and scrunched up the wrapper. I finally figured out how to play Say It Ain't So for you. That's awesome, I said with a wide smile. Play it for me? Let's go outside, Pete replied as he collected both our trays and threw the wrappers in the trash. We crossed the crowded parking lot, and Pete told me about his university plans for the following year. He had aced the audition and was accepted to York, his dream school, for music. I congratulated him, and we sat together on a small patch of grass outside Tim Hortons. The April ground was damp and soft, and I sat on my knapsack. Pete sat on the ground, not caring about the wet spot growing on his khaki pants. He strapped on his guitar and checked the tuning. Pete shot me a goofy expression as he started to strum. The music flew effortlessly from his guitar and filled the parking lot with a sweet melody. I hugged my knees to my chest and closed my eyes. Looking at the cemetery, I turned my head at the sound of footsteps. Dan stands about 3 feet away from me, his eyes swollen and red. I didn't know you smoked. Dan steps towards me. He wears a blue and white striped dress shirt and a navy blue tie. I do today, I reply with a small laugh. I tap my cigarette and look at my friend's face. I haven't seen much of him in the past few years. His face looks older and more mature. His long, curly hair moves with the wind. How are you? Dan asks. He looks at the cement ground, hands stuffed into his pockets. Confused. I stomp out my cigarette. This whole thing feels like an awful joke. Like it would have made more fucking sense if we got here and he jumped out of the fucking coffin and freaked us all out. I pause and stare again at the cemetery. It occurs to me that Pete will never leave this place. I push the thought of that out of my head and look at Dan. How are you? I'm so mad at him. Pete was my best friend, Dan says in a low voice. He pauses, his eyes darting back and forth as he thinks. He's my only friend who ever went on vacation and brought me back a souvenir. He pauses again and plays with his hands absentmindedly. I should have been there. I could have talked to him. I didn't call him as much since high school ended. I should have, but I didn't. And now he's gone, and I don't know why. I don't know why either. We stand in silence together and stare at the vast cemetery. Birds returning home squawk loudly as they fly overhead. The wind shifts and the clouds that block the sun cast dark shadows.
That was Where Pete Went, written and read by Samantha Ashenhurst. That concludes Life Rattle number 1265. My name is Lori Callis. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman. Tune in next week to hear more new stories by new Life Rattle writer Turbo Stevens.